bhunaktu sahaviryan kalavahai tejasvinavadhitamastamavidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Okay, page 82. Krishna is endowed with all qualities and powers, able to bestow all benedictions, is ordinarily difficult to approach. One who has properly worshipped him and then chooses the benediction of material enjoyment is certainly of poor intelligence, for he is satisfied with an insignificant result. Srimad Bhagavatam 10:48-11. The above verses should be understood as follows. Kaivalya Nata means he who is to be served by the Ekanta Bhaktas, right? Because here is the Ekanta means it's one-pointed. So it means it's just about Krishna. It's not about the demigods. It's not about material enjoyment. It's not about anything mundane, right? No karma, no gyan. So it just means by the pure devotees. That's the meaning of Ekanta, right, in this context. So therefore, if he's Kaivalya Nath, means he is the lord of those who are fixed in oneness. And that oneness means fixed on him. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. Previously, Kubja was unfortunate because of her crooked body. How astonishing. Just by offering ointment, a small portion of Bhagavad Dharma, her good fortune was produced. She then asked for the good fortune of having him stay with her. Srimad Bhagavatam 10:48-8. The good fortune of Kubja was something like Sudama's good fortune as expressed by the citizens of Dwarka. What pious acts has this unkept, impoverished Brahmana performed? People regard him as lowly and contemptible, yet the spiritual master of the three worlds, the abode of Lakshmi, is serving him reverently. Leaving the goddess of fortune sitting on her bed, the Lord has embraced this Brahman as if he were an older brother. Srimad Bhagavatam 10:80-25-26. Right, so it's that the connection to the Lord makes things glorious. That's what's special. Right? So it's not these external aspects. Means we follow the religious principles because that's the natural thing. But depending on what facilities you have or your position, then you're going to engage accordingly. Right? So therefore then we see here is that these other persons, they have... Yes. Okay. Then the next verse. Why should a lusty woman be praised? This is answered in verse 11. The person who desires material objects is not intelligent. She, however, desired the Lord alone. She was most intelligent. Thus, Kama is not to be classed with hatred or anger. Because of that, Kama cannot be considered sinful. Right? So, hatred and anger, then they're in their own category. Right? And then, in this case, because we're trying to take it, she's lusty, and just like hatred and anger, then this is all sinful, so she's in a sinful position, then you can't mix or add this. So then he's pointed out, no, it's different. It's not considered sinful. That makes sense? So when it's connected to Krishna, for Krishna's pleasure, then it gives up these bad qualities. Like you see the mother Yashoda becomes angry at Krishna. Right? So she ties him up. But it's only for his own good, because he's thinking if he behaves like this when he's older, then people will reject him in society. He won't be, you know, he won't have a proper position and all that. Because she wants all good fortune for him, she figures it's my duty to chastise my son and correct him. Does that make sense? So when it's about Krishna, it's there. So the thing is that these qualities may, then, what in the Vedic paradigm, then generally these are avoided. you know, in certain cases they may be there if it's the proper focus, but generally they're avoided. Right? So that's why then we follow what's recommended, because the religious principles being in goodness, then they lack these bad qualities. Mm-hmm. Right? It doesn't mean that we can't perform them with these bad qualities. You know, we're very, how you say, both persistent and, what do you call it, resourceful. So even in a very, you know, nice situation, we can still make a mess out of it. Does that make sense? Yeah. But the point is we're starting from the proper position. So we would avoid starting from a bad position that's based on these. Like the modern culture is based on passion and ignorance. So it's not going to be actually a good situation. One may be in that situation, but one tries to move it forward so that one is in a more stable situation. Right? So it's based on the Vedic principles. That's how one would want to do. So, yeah, you understand? So this connection to the Lord is there. So in her case, then, because it was focused about the Lord, then it doesn't take on the sinful aspect. Yes?
It seems that Pooja is in her own category.
Yes, she is.
With the wives of the Brahmanas, their madhurya, affection for the Lord, wasn't fixed. The same with the women of Mathura, but she is fixed, but that...
No, they're all fixed on Krishna, but that would all be considered, it depends on, at least in this case, generally in connection with Mathura, it's considered samanya.
Right.
It's just, it's general. It's not special. It's just, it's that, it's focused on Krishna, so that's its glory. But it's not more than that. That's why the queens at Dwarka is considered higher. Because they're thinking it's about themselves, whatever it is about themselves that they want, it's the satisfaction of that is in Krishna alone. Does that make sense? But it's about their desire. While the queens, it'll be half about their desire, half about Krishna, because it's a married situation. But for the gopis, that's why they're the most glorious, because it's just about Krishna. Right? So they're considering on using their feminine graces and all that is simply because that pleases Krishna. So they're not using them for their own purpose connected to Krishna. Like in the samanya aspect. Like she comes, the shyness, the this, the that. It's just that they're just her own reactions. But for the gopis, they manifest those because they know it will please Krishna. So it's a different. That's why it's the purest platform. You know, and everybody else recognizes that because they know, so they can see is that. You know, because does that make sense? You know, I said somebody just ups and goes off. Then how many ladies will maintain a relationship? You know what I'm saying? So they're maintaining. So that's their position. That's why all others can appreciate it. You know, it's like, okay, it's not that they've gone. Like the queens, he goes to Hastinapur, but it's not that he's given up their relationship. Out of occupational duties, he's going. You know, family relations and things like that, but that's still there. But he has the parakeet relationship, and then he's left. So what's the basis of the relationship? You understand? But they still maintain that. So that's special. So it's not about themselves. Like, because it's up to them, they die. But it's not up to them, it's about Krishna. Right? So because Krishna doesn't want them to die, that's why they don't. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued. Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Lord of all lords, is ordinarily difficult to approach. One who has properly worshipped him and then chooses the benediction of mundane sense gratification is certainly of poor intelligence, for he is satisfied with an insignificant result. Probably gives the example, you go to a millionaire and ask him for 10 rupees. You know, that's less intelligent. Verses 12 to 27, Akura offers prayers to Krishna. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, when Lord Krishna, wanting to have some things done, went to Akura's house with Balaram and Uddhava, the Lord also desired to please Akura. Footnote 35. Srila Jiva Goswami comments, Krishna went to Akura's house to fulfill Akura's desires, just as he had done with Kubja. Because of this similarity, the two pastimes are narrated together. He went with Balaram and Uddhava because he had previously promised. Srimad Bhagavatam 10:41-17. To come along with Balaram because he should do such activities independently without Balaram. And because he should not do such activities independently without Balaram. Right? Because remember, Akura had invited him to his house when he first came, but he says, no, I have to take care of, you know, the family members. How can I go to your house when you know, his parents are still in jail and this and that? So he says, let me take care of all that. Then when that's done, then all will come. So in that way, just like he had promised Kubja he would come later, you know, after he's finished his work, so then Akura is the same. That's why then they're told in the same story. Balaram had also promised Yashoda that he would accompany Krishna everywhere to protect him. He went with Uddhava since he was dependent on Uddhava's expert advice to comprehend certain affairs. Right? Because he's been trained by Brihaspati, so he's very expert in all these, you know, occupational aspects and cultural aspects. So then he can give advice on what they should do, because Kshatriyas always move with advisors. Right? Remember when Arjuna and the Pandavas were walking, you know, after the house of Lak, and the Gandharva attacked him, and they asked, why did you attack us? We did nothing wrong. He says, no, you're Kshatriya, you mean, you're Kshatriyas, but you're not following a Brahmin. You know, so you're not actually, you know, he's saying, we did nothing wrong. No, you're irreligious. One is you've graduated, but you haven't gotten married. Right? So you have no ashram. And as Kshatriyas, you're supposed to follow a Brahmin. You're not following a Brahmin. So his point was, what's religious about what you're doing? You know, so then, you know, when they became friends, then he advised them, okay, you can find a Brahmin here and this and that. And then, you know, all the rest was arranged. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes, so then he has to follow a Brahmin. So Uddhava is Brahmin. This case. There may be so many others, but he'll be his main minister. So with him you discuss everything. Akura stood up in great joy when he saw them, his own relatives and the greatest of exalted personalities, coming from a distance. Oh, I get it. Akura stood up in great joy when he saw them. Yeah. Makes it so much easier to capitalize it, but because of English grammar, you can't do that, you know, so you can't make the philosophy, you know, obvious. Okay. Them. His own relatives means Akura's own relatives means Krishna and Balaram and the greatest of exalted personalities coming from a distance. After embracing them and greeting them, Akura bowed down to Krishna and Balaram and was greeted by them in return. Then, when his guests had taken their seats, he worshipped them in accordance with scriptural rules. Footnote 36. The BBT purport mentions, Srila Jiva Goswami points out that Lord Sri Krishna and the others approached Akura in a friendly attitude. At first, Akura reciprocated that friendly mood. Then, in the course of showing them hospitality, he adopted his natural devotional attitude towards the Lord and thus offered his obeisances to Krishna and Balaram. Right? So because they came friendly, he dealt with like that, then he sat down and then he did his worship. O King, Akura bathed the feet of Lord Krishna and Lord Balaram, and then poured the bath water on his head. He presented them with gifts. of fine clothing, aromatic sandalwood paste, flower garlands, and excellent jewelry. After thus worshipping the two lords, he bowed his head to the floor. He then began to massage Lord Krishna's feet, placing them on his lap. And with his head bowed in humility, he addressed Krishna and Balaram as follows. Akura said, "It is our good fortune that you two lords have killed the evil Kamsa and his followers, thus delivering your dynasty from endless suffering and causing it to flourish. You both are the original Supreme Person, the cause of the universe and its very substance. Not the slightest subtle cause or manifest product of creation exists apart from you." So his point is, there's nothing that exists separately. So there we see the Dwarkavasis, by seeing like that, it brings out that aspect of Aishwarya, because that's the flavor that they have, right? You get from the Jnana Shakti, then you get the flavors of Madhurya, sweetness and opulence. So Mathura, Dwarka, it's actually the realm of, within the realm of opulence, it just has a great amount of sweetness in it. You know, it means the opulence is there, that's the main flavor in Vaikuntha. It's not that they don't appreciate the sweetness of the Lord, but it's all expressed through opulence. So Dwarka and Mathura are part of technically Vaikuntha. No, they're in Goloka, but they're the Vaikuntha aspect of Goloka. So you have Braj, and then you have everything else. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So therefore, then that is, in one sense, as Jiva Goswami says, the natural position. That Aishwarya, so therefore the opulence and everything like that. But because of the aspect of sweetness, then the relationships and the family relations and all those things happen. Right. Yes.
If we speak about spiritual world, Lower Goloka, would that be also?
This is all part of Lower Goloka. Yeah. Well, this is the obvious part. But there's also aspects of Vrindavan that are part of Lower Goloka. And so then that's not as obvious. You know, but generally we don't bring that out unless we need to. But does that make sense? So here is when they see how he is everything, how he is the Lord of creation, how he is everything that's there. Not the slightest subtle cause or manifest product of creation exists apart from you. It brings out that Aishwarya aspect in there and that worship, that reverence, right? It moves them into that Dasya Bhav. But we see is that the residents of Vrindavan, then that doesn't do it at all. It just means that more things remind them of Krishna. You know, especially the gopis. So everything can remind them of Krishna, because nothing is separate from Krishna. So that, the philosophy understood by them, means they will always remember Krishna. Right? As Braja Krishna. Here they always remember God, or the Supreme Lord. Right, so seeing this, even they have a relationship, that gets put to the side and it moves over into the southern. That makes sense. But we see with the gopis, that fine detail that they see Krishna in everything doesn't affect their mood. It just increases there. That's what Uddhava was thinking. He thought, I will add in this Aishwarya aspect because it works in Dwarka. You bring out the Aishwarya, and then that overwhelming in that the emotions and bhavas that are there will become reduced down because they'll go into the dasya bhav. And so then all the feelings of separation and all these disturbing ecstasies then are controlled. So he tried that with Nanda Baba. It didn't work. And with the gopis it worked even less. Does that make sense? It just, on Nanda Baba didn't work, but it didn't make it worse. But with the gopis, it just made everything worse. They're burning in the fire separation. By bringing this up, it just makes the fire increase. Because everything reminds them of Krishna. Srila Jiva Goswami remarks, "You both are the original Supreme Person, the cause of the universe and its very substance. Not the slightest subtle cause or manifest product of creation exists apart from you. What to speak of protecting this kingdom? The whole universe belongs to you. Though there is one Supreme Lord, because he has manifested as two, the verse is in the dual. You are the main Purushas with the internal and external energies." So, because in Sanskrit you have the advantage that you have singular, dual, and plural. I don't know about other languages. In English, you only have singular and plural. You don't have dual case like that. So the dual then, it said in, that it's just about them. You know, Nityananda Sahodito, that's dual. The Lord Chaitanya with Lord Nityananda, they come together. Because that signifies a relation. If I just say they, where's the relation? You understand? So the general plural is a category or, you know, a situation or something like that. But the dual indicates a particular relationship. So it has that more. Right, because you have an individual, their person, that they interact with another person, then that's still personal. Like that. You are the main Purushas with the internal and external energies. You are the material and efficient causes of the universe. You are situated as one with the universe by your two expansions, Prakriti and Jiva. Quote, originally during Satya Yuga, when all men were expert in spiritual discrimination, and also during the period of annihilation, the Lord was complete, one alone, without difference. That one entity, remaining free from material dualities, divided himself into two categories, Prakriti and Jiva, which are beyond words and mind, and which are real. Srimad Bhagavatam 11, 24, 2 and 3. Apart from you, nothing exists, either as cause or effect. The universe is saved and made prosperous by you. And so the jivas are there, they're his energy. His prakriti is there, it's his energy, so it's all non-different from him. In that way, he's everything. Right? But at the same time, he's conscious of everything. Does that make sense? We do things with our energy, and what we produce is not conscious. We cook lunch, it's not conscious. Because if it was, we might have some trouble at lunch. You know what I'm saying? But the point is Krishna, his energies, is different. His energy, but he's still fully conscious of it. That's the difference. That's why we can't understand it. Right? Because we produce things, our energy, you know, our so-called energy, we're not conscious of it because we're not the energies. We're the jiva. But Krishna is conscious of everything we do and everything that's done by his energy. So in that way, it is him. Does that make sense? So it's just like Krishna expands as Balaram, Balaram expands as Mahanarayan, Mahanarayan expands as Shankarshana, the Chaturvyuha, who expands as Mahavishnu, who expands as Karanadakshai, Garbhadakshai Vishnu, who expands as Kiridakshai Vishnu. So, within the heart of every living entity, that's all being expanded by Balaram. But the point is Krishna knows everything. Does that make sense? That's the point, that's the difference. Even though he's expanded, he doesn't have to concern himself, he knows everything. That's what makes him God and us not. Akura continued. O Supreme Absolute Truth, with your personal energies you create this universe and then enter into it. Thus one can perceive you in many different forms by hearing from authorities and by direct experience. Because it's all him. So by hearing from authority, then we can appreciate and understand all these different aspects. Otherwise, we don't hear from authority, we won't be able to get it. But so therefore, by personal experience, that's only after hearing from authority. If we've heard from authority, then it has some meaning. If we haven't heard from authority, then there'll just be speculation. We won't actually figure it out. The BBT purport mentions the grammatical agreement of Shruta Pratyaksha Gocharam in the neuter case with Atma Shrishtam Idam Vishvam indicates that the Supreme Lord, by entering his creation with his potencies, makes himself perceivable within the universe. Throughout the Bhagavatam and other authorized Vedic literatures, we often find descriptions of the Lord's simultaneous supremacy over all other things and his identity with them. We cannot reasonably draw any other conclusion from Vedic literature than the one powerfully preached by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Achinta Veda Veda Tattva. That is, the absolute truth is greater than and distinct from everything. So since he is the omnipotent creator and controller of all, and simultaneously one with everything, since all that exists is expansion of his own power. Throughout these chapters of Srimad Bhagavatam, we also observe one of the unique, extraordinary features of this great work. Whether Krishna is sending his message to the gopis or accepting prayers of Akrura, there is constant philosophical discussion. Throughout the Bhagavatam, the steady combination of fascinating pastimes with persistent spiritual philosophy is an extraordinary feature. We are allowed to glimpse and even to relish the spiritual emotions of the Lord and his liberated associates, and yet we are constantly reminded of their ontological position, lest we lapse into a cheap, anthropomorphic version. Thus it is entirely in character with the work that Akura in his ecstasy glorifies the Lord with precise philosophical prayers. So that'll be there. Plus, we see is that the mood in Dworkin that is that they do that kind of stuff anyway. If that comes up and they're reminded of it, then they will go into that. And if the personal or the relationships and that is brought up, then they'll go into that. So they can go either way. Does that make sense? While the Vaikuntha, they'll only stay in the one, they can't go into the other, they can't go into these kind of personal dealings. Or, you know, the three higher rasas. They'll always stay in Dasya. And while in Braj, then whatever their rasa is, whether it's presented in Aishwarya or in Madhurya, they'll remain just where they are. Does that make sense? In that personal exchange. Does that make sense? So basically you have Vaikuntha is Aishwarya, Vrindavan is sweetness, and Dwarka means it has both. And depending upon which is prominent, that's the mood that they take on. And then as it switches, they'll switch the other way. So they go back and forth. Like that. No question on, isn't that superior because they get both? Well, in Braj, they only get one taste. No? No, okay. We move beyond that. See, that's why if you chronologically study Bhagavatam, then you advance. Sorry? Yeah, it's just like, okay, the kids out in the backyard are eating the mud, and the adults in the house are just eating the food. And then the ones in between, they can eat the food and eat the mud. So is that superior? No, okay. That's the whole point.
Vedic examples.
Yes. Akura continued.
So Maharaj, So this is why Srila Prabhupada translated the Krishna book, to give the story and the philosophy.
Yes, because they're always, because the point is that it will be presented, let's say, by the more, you know, unintelligent, like the Sahajiyas, that it's just about the rasa and all, we don't care about the philosophy, because that is their philosophy, is they don't care about the philosophy. But we see is that the Brajabasis, that the philosophy isn't a problem for them. It just reminds them of Krishna. So for them it's non-different. So there's never any difficulty. So the two go together, because the point is he is all knowledge. He is all rasa. He is everything. So it's not a difficulty that these things come up. Does that make sense? Because otherwise sometimes it's thought, oh, so much philosophy and this and that. But what you see is how Prabhupada worded it. He has all the philosophy, but because the tone it maintains the same flavor, right? Because for the Brajbasis, it is the same flavor. Then it has that consistency, so then we appreciate that, you know, what's given in the Krishna book. While if we tend towards Gyan, you know, which is much of the time we like the analytical stuff because we tend towards Gyan, then the problem is when we discuss philosophy, it takes on that philosopher, that gyan kind of flavor.
Yes.
Like that. But for the Brajvasis, it doesn't. Does that make sense? And for the Dorkavasis, I mean, so those in the spiritual world, doesn't take on the platform of gyan. But it may take on Aishwarya. But for the Brajvasis, it doesn't do either. That's the whole idea. So then by associating with them through hearing these stories and hearing the conclusions given by the acharyas, then we don't get effect. What's the word used? It's something roga. It means the material disease.
Bhava roga.
Yes. So that bhava roga, that we are trying to get all the bhavas out of here, right? That's the difference. It's bhava, not bhava. Bhava is spiritual. Bhava is here, right? So if you haven't offered it to Krishna, it's bhava. If you've offered it to Krishna, that's bhava, or a mix, right? You know, as you please. If you prefer the, you're getting the best of both worlds. Some devotee was mentioning, I think they were sitting on the beach in the French Riviera, you know, chanting and, you know, having a nice drink or something and all that, and one turns to the other and says, we have the best of both worlds. Yeah. So then you can, you know. But in Braj, then, it's just about Krishna. They don't try to enjoy both worlds.
Sometime back, we had come across a statement in Bhagavatam which mentions that Krishna is knowledge.
Krishna is knowledge, yes.
And Vedanta Sutra mentions that he is a possessor of knowledge. So
yes, but that was the point was being here. What was it? They just said that. Here, throughout the Bhagavatam and other authorized Vedic literatures, we often find descriptions of the Lord's simultaneous supremacy over all things and his identity with them. That's the issue of the Veda Veda Tattva. He is knowledge and he's the Lord of knowledge. Yeah, you understand? So that's the point. He is everything, but at the same time he's the Lord of everything. That's why Krishna is pointing out in the Chaturshloki that he is everything, both in the way of just this physical position and the value that we attribute to it. He's both. But at the same time, he is a person is beyond that. Because he is it, but he's beyond it. Because for us, if you are something, that's what it is. It's not. But he's both. He is that and beyond that. That's his position. That's why he is who he is and we're not who he is. Like that. Because we can't do that stuff. Yes.
Sometimes in the discussion with the devotees, try to present one aspect of the absolute, like say Bhagavan aspect.
Yeah.
But then the other party, they bring it to the Paramatma or the Brahman level of the absolute.
Yeah.
Would it be a rasa bhas or it just means
something? Just a matter of, it means it just depends on how the conversation's going. It could be just a natural flow between points and going back and forth, just tasting different aspects. But if they only are seeing those, that may be just a level of realization, and they don't understand these other aspects. So what you can do is, as you see many times, they present a point, but they present other points along with it. And so it seems like a repetition, but it's not. It's from that point, it's complete in itself. So then you would, if you see that that's what's going on, then you have to refer to Bhagavan and his connection with, you know, Brahman and Paramatma. So that they see Brahman and Paramatma in the context of Bhagavan, instead of just talking Bhagavan. And that, you know, it should adjust. Does that make sense?
Regarding this particular statement,
the particular statement means
the first statement of the BBT purport mentions it.
The first statement of the BBT purport.
It's of the neuter case.
The grammatical agreement of Shruta with the neuter case. That one.
Yeah. So the question is, here it mentions that the Supreme Lord, because he enters the creation, and that is why everything is possible within the universe, is been termed as neuter case.
Yeah. Because it's all pervading. Means, in other words, the impersonal aspect is all pervading, so it's neuter. But at the same time, within that, there's still the male and the female.
Yeah, because masculine, feminine, neuter, you know, three cases.
Yes, but the point is it's which one you're bringing out at the point. That he's pervading everything, that's the neuter case. Right? That there's the masculine and feminine aspects of that all pervading, that's another point. because that's a deeper point. But the point is it's not manifest as that, because it's still, it is just inherent generalness. You know, there may be maleness, femaleness, and, you know, niceness and not so niceness. And does that make sense? So, but those are still all in a neuter position, because they're not doing anything. Only then when there's a manifestation, then you see it being applied. But where did it come from? You know, just like ground, it's neutral. But then from that ground, then you get so many varieties of plants are growing. But they're only growing from the ground. So they can't have qualities that the ground doesn't have. Does that make sense? Yeah. So it's all the qualities are there in Brahman, but you don't see it until they're manifest. That's why Brahman is not mentioned as a masculine or feminine. It's a neuter.
Yeah.
Akura continued. Just as the primary elements, earth and so on, manifest themselves in abundant variety among all the species of mobile and immobile life, so you, the one independent supreme soul, appear to be manifold among the variegated objects of your creation. You create, destroy, and also maintain the universe with your personal energies, the modes of passion, ignorance, and goodness. Yet you are never entangled by these modes or the activities they generate. Since you are the original source of all knowledge, what could ever cause you to be bound by illusion? Because he's the source of these, which then come. So being the source, then he can't be illusioned, even though they may generate illusion for the jiva. Because you have to remember, we're small. We can be overwhelmed. Something that's big, you can't overwhelm. So Krishna is unlimited. You can't overwhelm him. Well, the jiva, 1/10,000 on the tip of the hair, doesn't take a whole lot, right? You know, does that make sense? Even the, you know, the body of an ant or something still overwhelms the jiva. They think, I am this ant, you know, like that. So they lose it. So here is that the primary elements, earth, water, fire, air, ether, just like those pervade everything that there is in the creation, all species of mobile and immobile life. The same way Krishna is in everything, because it's his energy. Like that. So that means it's all Krishna. There isn't something separate from Krishna. It's all his energy. Right? And it's just a variety of energy. So the body is made out of the 24 elements. Then there's the jiva. So that's what you're dealing with. Jivas and the 24 elements. That's why sometimes it's said there's 25 elements in the material creation, including when you include the jiva. Not that they're material, but the point is you wouldn't have this manifestation if there were no jivas. Right? Does that make sense? It's not that internal potency gets covered by illusion and then has to come here. No, it's jivas get covered. Does that make sense? So in that way you can say. So that's all there is. So then what are you going to do? You're working with the jiva, which is the servant of the Lord. So that means they, as a servant of the Lord, can understand some aspect of that connection with the Lord. So depending upon how covered they are or not covered, right? Then that's how directly, or, you know, taking a little bit more time or examples than that to express it to them, right? And then how do you use, what language, what examples, what method you use is depending upon what's the particular combination of the 24 elements. Right? Because that's what defines what something, how it functions. We're thinking, no, this is me, but no, we're the soul. Right? The bodies, those are made of the 24 elements, and according to the combination, then they fit into this varna ashram or a bit outside that. Right? Does that make sense? You know, so then it has its nature. That's the way it works. So then that's what you're working with. Does that make sense? Right? Because if it's anything else, then you know. Okay, a dog, you do this. A cat, you do that. A horse, you do like this. You know, if it's a lion, you don't do any of that. You know, you don't go, you bite your finger off, right? No, your hand off, arm off, right? So, you know, it's just, you don't do those things. Does that make sense? So, you go by what's there. Just like an inanimate object, you deal with it according to what it is. Does that make sense? Like that. So, then that's what you're dealing with. That's what the preaching is. Is seeing, you're preaching to the soul, not the body. But you're using the medium of the gross and subtle body to communicate with that soul, since the soul thinks they are that body. Right? Does that make sense? So it's not that there's an emphasis on the 24 elements. No, the emphasis is on the soul. That's the real thing. And the other is real, but the realness comes from, how is it real? When it's defined according to how Krishna explains it. We define it according to our, like, popular sentiment. That's not real. That's illusion. Right? The 24 elements have an exact nature of how they function. And then the particular combinations they have, all that has its exact nature. And we see that in the metaphysical, that which comes from the original. So then you know what it is. You're just like fire. If we see fire here, are we going to think, oh, this is Indian fire, and just like nothing works in India, then it also doesn't do this stuff. See, there's no light. You can go over, stick your hand inside. See? Not even getting burnt, you know? Like that. You know, Indian fire, right? Does that make sense? But if you go to Germany, now that fire, now that really works. Like that, you know? No? Like that. Yeah. Burn you right up, you know, because it's German fire, right? So if you go over to France, it'll have that more, you know, pleasant and this and that and all these things like that. But, you know, so it's like as you go, it changes, right? Because it's, no, the fire is fire. Doesn't matter where it is, exactly the same, because that's created by Krishna. So the 24 elements, how they work, the combinations that are there, they work exactly according to the laws of nature. You understand those laws, then you know how to deal with it. But in any case, even if you don't know scientifically all the detail, if you understand how everything connects to Krishna, then you'll explain from that point. You see the soul, you see who you're talking to, what's the medium that you need to use, because that soul, being in a particular position, depending on how much they identify with it or not, how covered they are or not, what modes they're covered with, then that's what you look at. That's preaching. Does that make sense? So it's not about hard, soft, this, that. It's about preaching. Does that make sense? You know, is there, for a chef, is there hard cooking or soft cooking? No, there's cooking. That's it. You understand? So hard cooking means, you know, the guy's banging pots and pans and this and that and, you know, burning things and doing that. That's not cooking. Soft cooking, we just kind of deal, don't turn it too high, no, don't. You don't want to make the vegetables uncomfortable, you know, stuff like that. That's not cooking either. Does that make sense? So there's cooking. So that's all it is there's preaching. And if you understand that, because that's based on Krishna. Now, how do you see that? The material energy, how do you define those 24 elements? Because Krishna, he's the source of that. He defines how they work. He's the source of creation. He's the cause of everything. And he enters that. He's the effect. So therefore, it's Krishna. You can't say, no, but it's the modern world. Krishna is the modern world also. So what they talk in their philosophy also is coming from Krishna. Right? Illusion comes from Krishna. So they're in a particular illusion controlled by Krishna. Does that make sense? Right? So that's the whole thing. And then the soul is servant of the Lord. The soul has a particular nature. Right? They have to work under the other energies. Right? So preferably internal as opposed to external. So then you'll describe to the jiva their position and how they serve within that capacity. But in that, you know everything, because you're serving Krishna. You're going to do it through the internal energy. You're going to avoid the external. And you know who you are as a jiva. So you've covered everything. And that's how one sees. That's the point. So like that, then he is everything. That's why you have to deal with it. He's the jiva. it works in a particular way. Right? He is the body. He is the subtle body. It's his potency. But the illusion is we think this is mine, this is me, I and mine. Right? Yes.
Well, that's the justification to blame God for everything.
No, but the point is are you, since God is everything, are you doing things the way God would want? Just like if I go into the rich man's house and I, you know, without taking my shoes off, I sit on his, you know, on his sofa, put my feet up on the nice coffee table, you know, and then start doing whatever I want. If something goes wrong, can I blame the owner of the house? You know, I mean, did I ask him to buy white furniture? You know, you know. Is that anything? So that's the whole thing, is that we can't blame him still, because we're the ones that are using it, and we're just getting the results of what we use. Because we see when all that, you know, if it's all Krishna, is just acting without us, it works pretty good. You know, the material nature seems to go on very nicely without us. Like, you know, like that coconut tree over there. It could live its whole life without that wire wrapping around it going from one side to the other. It would be perfectly happy. But if they're not careful, then as the tree grows, that point there will become skinny. Like, you notice along the kadamba trees, there's originally they took the lampposts, instead of putting them on a post, just nailed them to the tree. Now the tree's grown around those and everything. So, you know, so that's the point. The material nature on one level can do fine without us. But if we follow then God's creation and the laws, then we fit into it harmoniously. So then the humans have their place. So then the anarchist idea, if we get rid of humans, then everything will go nicely. But if you get rid of humans, then what's the point? Because the whole point is for the living entity to come to the point of God realization. You're going to do that as a human. So if you get rid of the humans, then how is that going to work? But they could come back at the end of Kali Yuga and take part in there, but most likely they would not be on the horse. Okay. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, "The Supreme Lord enters the material cosmos and causes creation, maintenance, and destruction in their due course. Whereas the part and parcel living entity enters the material elements and has his material body created for him." So Krishna enters and controls it. We enter and are controlled by it. The difference between the living entity and the Lord is that the living entity is part and parcel of the Supreme Lord and has the tendency to be overcome by the interactions of the material qualities. Krishna, the Parabrahman, or the Supreme Brahman. Right? See, like here, Prabhupada mentions all three. Like that. So he does that regularly, or brings out. You see also in the prayers, they'll start off with something about that, and they'll always bring it back to the person. That's why it's not as easy to catch, because it's dealing with all three. Like, we're used to just dealing with the one or dealing with the other, then it makes sense. Yeah. Krishna, the Parabrahman, or the Supreme Brahman, being always situated in full knowledge, is never overcome by such activities. Therefore, Krishna is called Achyuta, meaning he who never falls down. Right, Achyuta, he never fails, he never falls down, he's not affected. So he's above, like that. That's his nature. While we, somehow or another, the jivas aren't generally known by that name. By surrendering to the Lord completely, they come to that platform, they're protected by the Lord, like you see the Lord's associates, the liberated souls, then they're on that platform. Krishna's knowledge of his spiritual identity is never overcome by material action, whereas the minute part and parcel living entities are prone to forget their spiritual identity due to material action. Right? He'll never be not in knowledge of who he is and what's going on, but we tend to get illusioned and forget. The individual living entities are eternally part and parcel of God, minute sparks of the original fire. Krishna as sparks, original fire, Krishna, as sparks are prone to be extinguished, but not the blazing fire. So the living entities can be overcome by material activities, where Krishna never can, because he's the source. That's the whole point. Akura continued, since it has never been demonstrated that you are covered by material bodily designations, it must be concluded that for you there is neither birth in a literal sense nor any duality. Therefore, you never undergo bondage or liberation. And if you appear to, it is only because of your desire that we see you in that way, or simply because of our lack of discrimination. So either he's performing a pastime, he wants it to be seen that way, or we have no discrimination and can't tell. Like that. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur comments. Krishna said, but if I have no ignorance in me, then where does this body of mine, a part of ignorance, come from? Akura replies, your body is not designated as coming from ignorance by those who have knowledge of the scriptures. Therefore, you do not have birth like the jivas. If your body appears to be material, it is only an appearance of birth like the jivas, since you are actually independent. As you do not have a material body born of ignorance, you do not have birth from the father seven. Rather, your birth is just your appearance, avyabhav. There is no difference between body and soul for you. Unlike the jiva, your body is you and is proven by the statement. In the Lord, there is no difference between the body and soul. So Krishna's, he can say he is his body, right? But we can't. Right? Since you are Brahman, transcendental to knowledge and ignorance, there is no bondage or liberation for you. So that's the thing, is he is knowledge, but at the same time he's transcendental to knowledge, since he's the source of knowledge. Right? This is the hard one to comprehend. I mean, we have the material world, the spiritual world, the jivas. Krishna is beyond that because he's the source of all of them. But at the same time, he's non-different from them. So that's his position is quite unique. Krishna said, but I was bound up to the mortar by Mother Jashoda and escaped from the lake of Kalia. Akura replies, let that be, as such bondage and liberation are not forbidden for you. Right? So it's not a problem. You can do that. Why do you accept bondage and liberation? It is because of your desire, the desire of your devotee. Or our desire, the desire of your devotee. We desire these incidents because they are worthy of meditation. In full knowledge, Vivekaha, you enact this bondage and liberation as you are beyond the influence of Maya. For one who is knowledge itself, there is no bondage to or liberation from this world, which is produced by lack of knowledge, right? You're bound because you don't have the proper understanding. Krishna is knowledge, so how can he be bound? Right? Because, you know, material consciousness is due to ignorance, right? He is knowledge, so there's no ignorance. So, Om Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Jai Srila Prabhupada ki Jai Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki Jai Nitai Gaura Prema.